There's crispy. And then there's crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
Hey, y'all. Happy Tuesday. Welcome to College Football Live with David Pollack and Joey Galloway. I'm Marty Smith. A little housekeeping before we get started with our conversations. UCF has added home and home future matchups with BYU and Boise State in the group of five. I know that was the number one thing y'all were waiting to learn this afternoon.
That's awesome.
Now,
that's great.
That is. I know. It's amazing.
Yeah, that's great.
I'm glad they might not want to do another home and home with Pitt. That didn't go well, but go ahead. I digress.
Now, the most perplexing story in college football over the past 24 hours deals with Houston quarterback De'Aaron King. This is a guy who's accounted for 62 touchdowns over his past 15 games, and he's going to shut it down. He decided he's going to redshirt. It's so interesting to me that he's made this decision, and I find it to be something that we should absolutely dive into here. Joey, what is your opinion of this decision by De'Aaron King to redshirt?
I think it's terrible for college football that guys that have played football are able to then decide to redshirt later. I think the spirit of the rule was for freshmen coming in that hadn't played much football, get a chance to take a look at it, and then make a decision on whether they should, sit out the rest of the season and save that year of eligibility. I think this is awful. But let me say this. He did it the right way. When you look at these guys like Isaiah Pryor from Ohio State of safety who jump into the portal, they can no longer work out at Ohio State with the team. What he's doing is sitting out, but still giving himself a place and a team to work out with while he's getting ready for whatever it is he's going to do next season.
This is basically like punting on this year if you're Houston. Like, we stink. We're 1-3. But maybe down the road we're going to be good. And Keith Corbin did it too. His wide receiver, second leading wide receiver, is doing the same exact thing for Houston. And it's going to give us into that realm now. Like, you see the Dolphins, it's different, but they're tanking. But like, there's nothing to play for now for Houston. So what happens is players can redshirt and worry about the year down the road. Now listen, De'Aaron King needs to refine his passing game. If he wants to go play in the NFL, and I know that's his hopes, that's his dream, he's not a pocket passer now, and he needs to continue to develop and grow and go through reads, and he's going to continue to practice in Houston. So it's an interesting twist to the four-game rule, Joey, but guess what? Trendsetters, this is stuff that we saw last year, that Kelly Bryant and all those guys that did it. It's going to continue to be a story. We're going to continue talking about this, and it's going to happen more and more in the future. This is part of the transfer or the four-game redshirt rule, the unintended consequences that come along with it, and you're going to continue to see it because skipping bowl games, you know, it's a me culture. That's what it's going to be about from here on in, so it's going to happen.
So you say, Pollack, that this is basically just where we are. Is this the new college football and we're all just going to have to adjust? Because we're all old men, okay? We came from a time when you stay where you are and you play. So
too bad.
Is this, okay, let me ask you just point blank. Do you guys believe he's quitting on his team in 2019?
There's no doubt. I mean, that's exactly what he just did. He chose to redshirt, and he's the best option that they have to win football games. And so, yeah, he's quitting on his team this season. Now, it'll be interesting to see whether he comes back to Houston or whether he takes off to go somewhere else. But listen, this is no different than the bowl game stuff. You know, people skipping bowl games. They're not big enough bowl games, so I'm done. I think you're going to continue to see people when their team stinks down the stretch and they could come back and they're healthy, but they're worried about their NFL draft stock. Yes, this is the new norm in college football. It's a different day.
And it's different than quitting in a bowl game. Those guys are leaving. Those guys are saying, I'm not going to play in that last game. Now, believe me, I don't agree with guys doing that either, but this is different. This is in a season. This is their leader, their starting quarterback, the star of the team saying, no, thank you. Now, Pollack, you sound like you think he's coming back. You sound like you think he's going to sit out this season and come back to Houston. I'm not so sure that's the play here. He might just be quitting on not just this season, but looking to go elsewhere after this.
Yeah, he could be. And listen, again, nobody's going to begrudge him because that's the world we live in the society we live in. You're allowed to transfer and you're allowed to go somewhere else, and he's going to be a grad transfer next year. And listen, I want to point this out because I think it's a very important part of De'Eriq King's story. This kid has been very unselfish and has moved to wide receiver and played early in his career at wide receiver and now is developing at quarterback and not where he needs to be if he's going to get to the NFL. So this is also a part of the process. He played early, moved, and sacrificed for his team. I don't know if he'll end up at Houston. He says he's going to be back at Houston, and if he is, awesome for Houston. Obviously, they get Corbin out there too, and their team better next year hopefully is better. But, you know, King also did a lot of sacrificing early in his career.
Not only is he developing at quarterback, Pollock, some of the most renowned quarterback tutors in all of the land are extremely enamored with King's ability as a signal caller. I had Oklahoma's opener this year when Jalen Hurts debuted for the Sooners. After that game, this is what Lincoln Riley told us about King after the game.
I mean, I said it all week, De'Eriq King is, there aren't five quarterbacks in the country better than that cat, and that may be too many. He's fantastic, and we gave him hell. I mean, he had to move around a lot, and I didn't think we really let him get comfortable very much of the day, which was we did a good job. He got out a few times, which that's going to happen with that cat. He's very, very impressive.
So Lincoln loves what King can do, and this is the perfect type of quarterback for an Oklahoma scheme, Joey Galloway. What are your thoughts on whether or not he could end up at Oklahoma?
I don't think Oklahoma's the move. I think that opposing coaches always say that about a guy. And De'Eriq King has to be tough to stop, no doubt. I think what becomes interesting in this situation is you look at a coach like Kendall Browse, who was the offensive coordinator at Houston last season. He's now gone on, and he's at Florida State. And that makes more sense to me. And it'll be very interesting if that's the play here. De'Eriq King stops this season, sits out, and makes a move to somewhere like a Florida State where his former offensive coordinator is now. And then we get into a really interesting area of college football because coaches always move around. If you can get a kid to sit out and then you can get him next season, this is going to be like real live free agency.
I need to know this really quickly, Joey Galloway, before I come to the TV and spear you.
Yes.
Are you saying that Florida State is a better destination from De'Eriq King than Oklahoma?
What I'm saying to you is this. It would make more sense to me with this move that we've never seen before where a guy steps out of the middle of a season and says, I'm just going to redshirt. You might believe he's coming back. I don't believe that. And I don't believe Oklahoma would be the next move simply because Oklahoma has a couple guys behind him. They've recruited very well at quarterback and everybody's in line to go there. You said yourself, De'Eriq King has to develop as a passer. It's going to be interesting if
so
he goes to Florida
Hurts.
State with Kendall Browse.
So does Jalen Hurts. Jalen Hurts, man, have you seen him over the past couple years?
He's looked good at times, but not in the same ballpark.
This is a power
Lincoln.
Move by a player, though, guys. That's the thing
the
here, okay?
Move.
We've seen how the NBA player has started to dictate that league, okay? The NFL is starting to move that direction with some of these power moves that NFL players are making. This is a player power move that I am not hurt. I am 1-3. I want to progress, and I have the right to play four games and sit. So what does this mean for the players in intercollegiate athletics, given the rules, that they can make this choice?
It means they got the power. I mean, it means they have the opportunity that they
can
do it.
Is it unprecedented power?
It's going to take the focus off of, I could win this year and maybe I could be a 7-8 win team, start to build something with some guys or guys that are just going, no, I'll look down the road. So yeah, absolutely. It empowers the players more, just like the transfer portal empower the players. Kelly Bryant says, hey, Clemson, see ya. I'm gone in the middle of the season. So it's something that 100% leads towards the players having more power in the sport.
I think this move definitely gives the players more power. Like I said, he can still work out at Houston. These guys in the portal, they can no longer go back to their former school and still work out. That is completely different. That move to me in the middle of a season makes zero sense if you're a player because now you got to go find somewhere and someone to work you out. As opposed to in De'Eriq King's situation, when he just says that I'm just going to redshirt, then he's still going to be there. All the power is with him.
There were some monumental games last weekend, including the one Pollock was at in Athens, Georgia, as the Dogs welcomed Notre Dame to town and ultimately prevailed It was quite a game. And it's interesting what we learned about both of those programs. We'll discuss that in just a moment. But let's take a look first at the AP Top 10 brought to you by Capital One. Saturday night's big game in Athens meant Georgia stayed at number 3 behind Clemson and Bama, while Notre Dame dropped 3 spots to number 10. Fellas, the SEC takes up half the top 10, but let's get back to Georgia and Notre Dame first. David, which one of these teams did we learn more about on Saturday? Was it Notre Dame and the way they played Georgia, or Georgia in winning that game?
Well, listen, I think we learned about both. But I learned that Georgia can find itself and play maybe not their best game and still beat a really good quality team. I learned that Georgia can handle some adversity. Listen, this is a game that you talk about coming into, Joey. They were already out a starting quarterback or cornerback. To start the ball game, lost their best corner in the second play of the ball game, played without a right tackle, Isaiah Wilson. So I learned that they could handle some adversity. I learned that they could still be a really good football team. I also learned, Joey, that I got some question marks about Georgia and their pass rush. I mean, this is a team that coming in, I thought, had figured it out and could put pressure on the quarterback and their pass defense would be really good. I'm going to need to see them against good teams pressure the quarterback and harass more. But the bottom line is, and I say this with every team in college football across the country, when learning, when making your mistakes, Joey, don't take L's making your mistakes.
Yeah, I walked through from the game thinking this Notre Dame team not only improved from week one when we've seen them against Louisville on the road where Ian Book looked shaky, they found a way to win because they got a lot of turnovers, to see them progress and go on the road to Georgia in a game when everyone thought that Georgia was going to run them over because Georgia runs the ball so well. The assumption was that Georgia was going to be too physical on offense, run Notre Dame over, and they walked in there and they stood up and they did it in a straight 4-3 fashion. It wasn't we got to bring 8 guys down, get the safety in the box to stop the run. For at least 3 of the quarters in this game, Notre Dame played really good defense, and then eventually the power of Georgia started to take over. But I walked out thinking this Notre Dame team is a top 10 team, and I hope that they don't get punished for losing this game by 6 points on the road at number 3 in the country. I was impressed by what Notre Dame was able to do.
And I'm just telling you, from being there, I've never seen the atmosphere that good. And it led to 7 false starts, and it led to timeouts by Notre Dame. If they don't play that game at Georgia, that might be a different game. That's a tough, hostile environment. And you 100% got to respect Notre Dame for playing that game.
Real quick on this, fellas. Joey, you said they're a top 10 team. Are they a playoff team?
They can be. I mean, as we sit here today, there are no such things as playoff teams. We got a lot of football left to play. Notre Dame, the fact that they stayed in the top 10 now, the real rankings haven't come out, but the fact that they stayed inside the top 10 with the one loss lets you know that people respect what they're able to do. If they run the rest of their schedule, and we don't know what's going to happen in these other conferences, it's an uphill battle because they don't have a conference championship game, but they look like a team that could get in the playoff.
They're not. They're out of the playoffs. They have no shot to make the playoffs. Last year, we were sitting up on set and we were debating the final 4 teams. And Notre Dame was in the conversation, by the way, of teams that might not be in. And they were undefeated. They had a 0. Remember, no championship game, conference championship game when everybody gets to play. Notre Dame, Michigan does not look good on the schedule now. Virginia's probably their toughest task the rest of the way. So, no, I don't think that Notre Dame will be in the college football playoff discussion. They might be a team that's on the outside looking in the top 10, but they're out of the playoffs.
Oklahoma's really good.
Always negative.
Ohio State's really good. And the SEC West with LSU and Alabama is insane. And Georgia gets that landmark victory. It's going to be tough for Notre Dame to get their way in there. The Michigan offense has underwhelmed in the first month of the season, guys, and struggled mightily at Camp Randall Saturday. Coming up, we'll discuss the state of Michigan football.
College Football Live is brought to you by Cheerios. Good goes round.
On Saturday, Justin Fields and number 5 Ohio State face Adrian Martinez in Nebraska, 7:30 Eastern on ABC and the ESPN app. College game day in Lincoln as well, 9 a.m. Eastern and the ESPN app. Michigan was 0 for 10 on third down Saturday against Wisconsin. That's the first time in 15 years UM failed to convert at least one third down. Here's what Wolverines head coach Jim Harbaugh said about Saturday.
Really from A to Z, wasn't good enough. We didn't play physical enough. We were out hustled. I take responsibility for that. In any ways that, you know, we were out schemed, also take responsibility of that. It's my job to make sure that we're completely sound. That was a bad day. That was not a banner day for Michigan. We saw it. You saw it. The entire football world saw it, that it wasn't good enough, and it's not acceptable. Not acceptable to us, and not much more to say about that.
Not much more to say. It's unacceptable, says Coach Harbaugh. David, what would you say is the state of Michigan football right now?
Well, obviously, after this weekend, it's not good. And it's especially offensively, we continue to say the same thing. Joey, I feel like we're on repeat, we're on loop for the last several years. I think some context for this debate before we get into Harbaugh and all of his stuff. The 7 years before Harbaugh, with the Hoke and Rodriguez era, they averaged 6 wins a year. The 4 seasons with Harbaugh, they're right at 10. So they are much better than they were in the past. There's no doubt about it. But right now, what you're seeing with Wisconsin curb stomps you and makes you look absolutely anemic offensively and makes you look like a bad football team. If this continues for the rest of the season, it's 100% a huge problem. Joey, I'll phrase it like this, though. Joey, what happens to all those Michigan fans and all those people out here if Michigan beats Michigan State and beats Ohio State and runs the table? Everybody's happy. Everybody's great. So it's alarming what you saw, but I don't think it's time to punt on the season yet and say, God, these guys suck and Jim Harbaugh should be fired.
Yeah, you're correct. It's alarming, but it's not trending in the right direction either. You bring in Josh Gattis to run your offense, things were supposed to be different. Urban Meyer steps down at Ohio State. Things are supposed to be different for Michigan. I don't know how that translates, but things were supposed to be different for Michigan because Urban Meyer was gone. It's supposed to be their year to win the Big Ten. The real problem is when you watch this game, there's just not a fix for when you get run over by a team. And that's not supposed to happen to Michigan. It's not about winning and losing so much in this Wisconsin game. It's the way it happened. And so, David, and you know in football, when you are physically smacked in the mouth by a team the way this game looked, you can't go back to the drawing board and say, hey, we're going to be tougher. Like, you can't fix toughness during a season. And so that's why it feels so bad. Now, you're right. If they run the table, they beat Michigan State, they beat Ohio State, which nobody thinks they can do that right now after this weekend, things will be all better. But right now, the way that team looked on Saturday, getting physically run over the way they did, it just doesn't look good. Oh. Yeah, exactly, for sure.
Fellas, Michigan not the only Big Ten team with offensive woes. Northwestern not looking stellar either. Get this, they average 15.7 points a game. That's 128 out of 130 FBS teams and the lowest in the Power Five. But trust me, Pat Fitzgerald, he ain't interested in your perspective.
I understand there's 40,000 experts on Twitter that can call plays for me, so my email address is hashtag I don't care. Okay, so shoot that out. We got to be better, and we're going to work to be better. So anybody that's negative, I respect it, and I don't care.
Email address, hashtag I don't care, fellas. What do you think?
I really hate to see my man Pat Fitzgerald go down this path. I mean, why can't coaches, we know they're lying, but why can't they just stick with, I don't see any of that stuff, I don't read this stuff, but they're all paying attention. I hate to see him do it.
I love it. I absolutely love it. You know what? All of y'all in the stands are experts. We should be doing this on third down. Man, go stand in that huddle. You get boat raced. You don't know what you're talking about. That dude knows football. Find some Jimmies and Joes. It will be very helpful to help him throw the football over the field to some athletes. But I love when you take shots at people that think they know what they're talking about.
I've only met a few people in my life who really don't care what you think, and I just happen to be on television with two of them right now. I love you guys. Hey, fellas, Joey, football is lighting it up. Through 4 games, Burrow has more passing yards than each of the past 3 Heisman winners, Kyler Murray, Baker Mayfield, and Lamar Jackson had at this stage in their Heisman-winning campaign. Might Joey football win that Heisman this year? ACC Network is your home for ACC sports. Get ACCN.com. Check for providers in your area. If you don't see it, contact them and demand they carry ACC Network.
College Football Live is brought to you by Old El Paso. Everything goes with Old El Paso.
Episode 3 of The American Game focuses on the topic of integration in college football. Stories about legends like Eddie Robinson, Andre Ware, and more tonight at 7 Eastern on ESPN and the app. Now it's time for this week's ultimate performance presented by BMW. Joe Burrow on Saturday became the first quarterback in LSU history to throw for 350-plus passing yards in three consecutive games. The LSU record for TD passes is 28. That's Jamarcus Russell in 2006 and Matt Malk in 2003. And Burrow is just wowing us every single weekend, fellas. David, where would you rank LSU's offense right now nationally?
It's just crazy that you're saying they're in the top five. I mean, we could debate where we put them in the top five, but this is LSU. This doesn't happen ever, Joey. We've never, like, if you think about his yards per game, Joey, is almost double every quarterback over the last six seasons before he got there. Seven seasons. I mean, the touchdown, every number, he's shattering every record in the LSU books. And listen, they don't have a ton of balance on offense, but I'm putting them ahead of Washington State on offense. I'm putting them ahead of Arizona. I'm putting them ahead of Louisiana. Now, I'll put Alabama ahead of them from the receiver core, and I got Tua, but Oklahoma I'll keep ahead of them. But they're right there in the conversation for the top five best teams in college football on offense.
Yeah, I would agree with you, and it'll be interesting to see them moving forward, of course, when they get into the SEC, I think at Florida in a couple weeks. As long as their receivers and Marshall, I think, who is hurt now, they got Jefferson and Chase. When you got big play receivers as a quarterback, you can throw it out there and let these guys make plays. That's the same as Alabama. That's the same as Clemson has that opportunity to do the same thing. It'll be interesting to see what happens in SEC play.
It's very rare that we're talking how adept LSU's offense is and some concerns on the other side of the football. I love spending my Tuesday with you two and you guys, America. That's College Football Live for Joey and David. I'm Marty. Thanks for hanging out. See you tomorrow.